John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Pope Francis visits the United States on his American tour upcoming later this month. We thought it might be a good opportunity to talk about how he has changed both the Vatican and the Catholic Church during the first 2 years of his papacy. No question that he's shaken things up. His calls for more attention to poverty and income inequality and his softer words on more traditional Catholic issues like abortion, homosexuality, and divorce have made him both wildly popular and a somewhat polarizing figure within the church. Robert Draper is the author of the cover story in a recent issue of National Geographic magazine headlined, "Will the Pope Change the Vatican or Will the Vatican Change the Pope?" And he joins me to talk about Pope Francis and what he hopes to accomplish in the Catholic Church. Robert Draper, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thanks for having me, John.
So, Pope Francis, let's lay out some of the major reforms of his papacy. He's been very outspoken about things like income inequality, for example.
Sure, and I think we should back into this, John, by just saying that he has not yet instituted major doctrinal reforms, and I'm not altogether convinced that he'll do so, though that shoe could drop, who knows. He has, however, as you've indicated, instituted a major change tonally, and I think that's not nothing. He also, I think that the Catholic Church, in the view of many, had been focused very much on sin, had put sin in the center of its preoccupations, rather than on man's suffering. And I think that Pope Francis has very deliberately reversed that, has encouraged and indeed directed the clergy and his bishops to go out to the periphery, to reach out towards those who are alienated, rather than to be this insular Catholic Church that has expected the world to come to them. I think that is a change in optics and a change in tone and attitude, but it's a very, very transcendent sort of change. He also, of course, he was elected in the conclave in March of 2013 by a majority of archbishops at a time when change was very much desired in the Catholic Church. And at that time, as you know, the church was beset with scandal after scandal, many of them financial, some of them related to pedophilia. And essentially, the Catholic Church had suffered nothing but bad news days. Those who elected him were, I think, wanting someone who was from the outside, who was not a Vatican insider, who was not Italian or even European, and so the very presence of the very election of the first Jesuit, the first South American, the first non-European in something like 1,000 years, all represent remarkable changes in and of themselves.
So, and also we had something else that was almost unprecedented, not quite, but the resignation of a sitting pope. I mean, nobody was expecting that we would have to have an election for a new pope back in 2013. Benedict the 16th hadn't been pope for all that long. Suddenly, here we are.
No, you're right, and I think that Pope Benedict made a decision that was very much based on what he himself described as insufficient energy, mental or emotional, to deal with these scandals that were rocking the Vatican, rocking the Catholic Church, and this, by the way, has set, as you've indicated, a very interesting precedent, because typically popes die while they are in office, and his successor, Pope Francis, is quite impressed with this, has indicated as such, and so we can get to this later, but all indications are that Pope Francis will follow suit and probably will have a short papacy himself, perhaps in the order of 3 or 4 years, so that he too can retire while his faculties are still about him.
Mm. Oh, we're inviting listeners to call in and let us know what they think. The Pope is making a visit to the United States. What do you expect the Pope to say? What would you like to hear from Pope Francis while he is in the U.S.? What are you looking for? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. What do you think about the various pronouncements that the Pope has made in speeches and so forth, and the way he conducts himself? We'll get into all of those things this hour as well. 800-642-1234. Maybe you don't approve of what the Pope has been doing and the things that he's been saying? Well, let us know what it is you don't approve of and why. 800-642-1234. talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. You can also join in the discussion on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Kathleen out sick today. She is expected to return on Monday. We're hoping for speedy recovery, and that Kathleen will be back with us on Monday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We're talking about Pope Francis this hour, wondering what you think. Again, that number, it's different than the one we normally use for the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is 800-642-1234. Pope Francis, he came right out of the gate. He said, well, there are a lot of things that need to be changed. Let's talk about what you mentioned, the financial scandals. There were sex scandals plaguing the Catholic Church. What was the situation, though, inside the Vatican that Pope Francis was confronted with when he became the Pope?
Well, a few different things. I mean, one of them was the administrative body overseeing the Vatican is the Curia, the Roman Curia, and Pope Francis felt that institution to be, once again, unaccountable, insular, and essentially not discharging its functions correctly. That in addition to the fact that the Vatican Bank it had all sorts of financial problems and indeed seeming financial malfeasances, and that there appeared to be a succession of cover-ups such that priests who were accused of pedophilia were not brought to justice, but instead that those cases were swept under the rug. And so in each particular case, John, Pope Francis created these commissions and or individuals who would look deeply into these matters. And I think that though the results thus far are somewhat uneven, that it's clear that there's some vigor with which the scandals relating to the Vatican Bank are being pursued, that particular priests and bishops have been brought to justice that weren't beforehand. And he gave a rather remarkable speech. It's the annual speech that he gives at the end of the year to the Curia, and it's usually a very, very ceremonial speech in which nothing of substance is said, but this is one in which he trotted out what he called the illnesses afflicting the Curia, and they had to do with vanity and greed, and it was very much a lecture and very much calling to task this very, you know, sort of insidery administrative body. So these are the kind of structural reforms that he did pretty much straight out of the gate. There are, in addition to that, I think, you know, just a lot of kind of optical, if not reforms, then at least changes that literally were apparent to the naked eye the first the evening that he was elected and stood there not wearing all of the sort of imperial raiments, not wearing the gold finery, but instead this very simple silver pectoral cross, wearing his kind of cheesy wristwatch instead of the Rolex that had been favored by Pope John Paul II, and wearing these orthopedic shoes, introducing himself not as the Pope but as the Bishop of Rome, concluding by saying, please pray for me, and then instead of hopping into the sedan that was waiting for him, climbing into the bus that was conveying all of the archbishops who had just elected him, paying his bill at his hotel in Rome the next day, and then at his first press availability when asked what he would like his papacy to be, saying, oh, how I would love a poor church and for the poor. All of this in the first 48 hours was a radical tonal departure from what we've come to see or what we've come to expect from a pope.
Well, and he doesn't live in the official papal residence. He lives in a two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And he went to a youth prison and washed the feet of prisoners. He has exhibited a terrific amount of outward humility. But this is not this is how he was in Argentina. I mean, this isn't something he just now started doing. His career has has demonstrated a lot of this, hasn't it?
Yes, I think fundamentally, and I spent several weeks in Argentina interviewing dozens of individuals who've known him for as long as 50, 55 years, and people who've known him over an extended period of time. And what Jorge Mario Bergoglio, which is his real name, is fundamentally is a porteño, which is what they say in Buenos Aires for. It literally means a man of the port. But what that it basically means in vernacular is a man of the street, a common man. And that is literally the case with Bergoglio, with Pope Francis, in that he's always been much more comfortable with people of modest means than people who are affluent. He has preferred use mass transit. Literally was always taking the bus and the subways, was well known for doing that sort of thing, or just going on foot. And he actually had a driver's license but never used a car, never wanted to be ushered around by a sedan. And so he, and beyond that, had a natural affinity for people in the barrios, for the people in poor neighborhoods, and directed when he was both provincial, the head of the Jesuits in Argentina, and later the archbishop and cardinal of Buenos Aires, directed the clergy to go out into the streets, to go out into the poor neighborhoods. And so, yeah, that has always been his predilection. And so, though it was a surprise to the outside world who knew nothing about this man when he was elevated to the papacy, for those people who did know him, had known him for a long time, it was absolutely in keeping with the Bergoglio that they've been well acquainted with.
We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who said they think that what the Pope has said thus far is awesome and refreshing. Don't always agree with the Church, but the Pope is a breath of fresh air. A lot of people, I think, have echoed that this has been a breath of fresh air for the Catholic Church.
Well, and John, I think what's particularly salient about the caller's remark is that he or she indicated, you know, not always, you know, approving of the Catholic Church. I think that what Pope Francis has done that is most remarkable has been that he has awakened a kind of spirituality that transcends the Church. I mean, it transcends Christianity. And that's not by accident, by the way. I mean, he has very much promoted, you know, an ecumenical agenda, has gone out of his way, often to the dissatisfaction of traditionalists within the Catholic Church, of embracing evangelicals, embracing Jews, embracing, you know, Muslims, and emphasizing the love of God rather than emphasizing the primacy of the Catholic Church. Again, that's a recognizable departure from a church that always, you know, had from its outset indicated that it was established as the first church by Jesus Christ, that it was that Saint Peter was the rock upon which Jesus' church would be built, mm-hmm. and to linguistically emphasize a more holistic approach to spirituality is a remarkable thing that I think has drawn a lot of people to him in particular, but even to the Catholic Church generally.
Well, let's hear from Ed in West Dallas this afternoon. Ed, good afternoon.
Yeah, what a disaster this Bergoglio has been. We talk about the first 48 hours of his papacy. Within the first 48 hours of his papacy, he picked a fight with those of us who are traditionalists by calling us Pigalians, we who fought for this mass that was stolen from us in the 1960s, the mass of Pius V in the parlance of the vernacular, the Latin Mass, the absolute contempt that he has for us, the great thing that Benedict did was to open arms up to us who have been just vilified by our own church for 50 years. We have been the outcast, and we have watched this church destroy itself. You talk about the sexual problems under Benedict. The sexual problems in this church began with Vatican II. It began with John the 23rd and Paul the 6th. I watched this as the seminaries were just destroyed and a number of vocations, both to the sisterhood and the priesthood, dropped. We have a situation in Milwaukee here with Jerome Listecki, who has refused to deal with the victims of sexual abuse. With the victims of sexual abuse under the papacy of Francis. And until we realize the beauty of our church is in our doctrine and in our ritual, and it's only through that that we can then go out into the world and preach to the poor and be concerned about the social and ecological issues of the world, we're just going to be spinning our wheels.
All right, and thanks for the call. Robert Draper, a comment before we go to break?
Absolutely. A couple things I'd like to say. For one thing, I want to make clear both to the caller and to others that I was in no way suggesting, the facts simply would depart from any notion that the sex scandals began under Benedict. The caller is exactly right that they began decades ago, and in fact, Benedict was beginning to address those. However, it was Benedict himself who acknowledged that he lacked the energies to combat this further. It's not an intractable problem, but it's a very difficult one, and it's not going to get solved overnight. As for the caller's indication that the beauty of the Catholic Church is in its doctrines and its rituals, I think that there's some room for disagreement in terms of rituals, but again, there's been no indication that Pope Francis has an interest in changing doctrine. I think that it would not surprise me at all if he, in fact, did not change anything doctrinal about it. Changing the emphasis of how the preoccupation with sin, as opposed to the preoccupation with outreach and the preoccupation with love, is I think more what Francis is directing the church to do, rather than to radically overhaul the very definition of what makes the Catholic Church what it is.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Robert Draper will continue with us in our discussion. We haven't really gotten to what we expect from the visit of Pope Francis to the United States, which begins September 22nd. He'll be coming to New York City and Philadelphia as part of his American tour. What are we looking forward to hearing him say when he comes here? And what about some of the things that he said in the last week leading up to this tour? Particularly some comments about annulments and things like that, marriage, the whole thing. We'll talk about all of that, and we'll take your calls and questions. People are commenting on Facebook. We'll get to all of that and more when our program continues. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Kathleen, hopefully we'll be back on Monday, hale and hearty. Today we're talking about, the Pope Francis is going to be visiting the United States coming up later this month, and we thought that might be a good opportunity for us to talk about his papacy and the changes that he has wrought within the Vatican and the things he said, the changes he might make in the Catholic Church. He hasn't changed any doctrine. Maybe he won't. We're discussing all of that with Robert Draper, contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine and National Geographic, and a correspondent to GQ. He was the author of a recent cover story in National Geographic magazine about the Pope and the changes in the Vatican. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. We had a caller who couldn't hang on, who wanted to talk about the Pope's discussion of climate change, which got him in hot water with some American politicians. He was roundly criticized for delving into science via his encyclical on climate change. And the irony, of course, is that he has, I believe, a degree in chemistry. Our caller said you wouldn't know that by listening to the political pundits. What about this? I mean, the Pope certainly has not been shy about speaking out on a number of sensitive political issues, and he seems to not mind when people talk back.
No, not at all. This one's particularly near and dear to him, John, because as Archbishop of Argentina, he was intimately acquainted with the destruction of the Amazon rainforest and spoke out against them then. And when he became Pope, immediately referenced that in a number of press availabilities as something that was on his mind. So he sent some signals at the very outset of his papacy that he would have something to say on the subject of climate change. Nonetheless, before the encyclical was published, recently, there'd been some indications that maybe he'd tread a little bit softly, that he would say something on the order of, we don't know the degree to which mankind contributes to global warming, but we do know that that God has charged us to be stewards of the earth, and so regardless of whether it's us that's at fault, we should do something about all of this. But that's not what occurred. The encyclical, in fact, drove a established a very strong causal relationship using scientific data between human activity and the warming of the planet. And yes, that definitely got some conservative politicians up in arms. We'd already been hearing from people like presidential candidate Rick Santorum that it's best that the Pope stays out of politics. He should just be quoting scriptures and tending to the sick. And this only inflamed them further. I suspect, by the way, that we're going to be hearing more along these lines on September the 24th at 9:20 Eastern time when the Pope speaks before the joint session of Congress. I strongly suspect that the environment will come up again.
What else do you think the Pope will be talking about when he addresses Congress?
Well, let's put it this way, John. I mean, he is coming for the first time in his life to America, to the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth. And given everything we know about this man, there is no chance that he's going to stand before Congress and say, "Congratulations on your wealth and power. I salute you." Instead, what he's going to say is, "With your awesome wealth and power come great responsibility." And that responsibility should be directed towards the caretaking of the earth. It should be directed towards a worldwide problem of income inequality. And I think that you know, there is precedent for the Pope going to places where he knows it could be an uneasy environment for him, and nonetheless speaking forthrightly. He did this when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and spoke at an annual event in front of the president, President Kirchner, and railed out against government corruption, which so upset the president that he stopped attending that annual speech thereafter. When he became pope, he went down to Calabria, a stronghold of the mafia, and gave a speech lecturing the mafia, basically saying that they were excommunicated. So the Pope tends to make most of these opportunities. He's not going to come and speak in platitudes. He's going to get the attention of people, and he's going to create some discomfort.
800-642-1234. Let's take a call here. And let's go to Anita in Madison. Anita, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The point that the guest just raised is pretty much the substance of my question, but maybe he can clarify. One of the things I'm concerned about is how is this wonderfully humble, how is humility, selflessness, and public-spiritedness going to counteract the extreme narcissism, selfishness, and individualism that seems to be dominating at least the media discussion of our politics? And I am particularly interested in, being a Latin American, and recognizing there is this North American sort of a lot of money here and oppressiveness in this part of the world. How is he going to address walling off and trying to keep people out and keep the money here? I mean, that's an anathema to what the guest just said. Is he going to address that North American hegemony and the bias against the Latin American people who predominantly are coming for a better life and a share of the wealth that we do have?
Anita, thanks for the call. A lot to chew on there, Robert Draper.
Sure. Yeah, Anita, I'm so glad that you mentioned the subject of Latinos and of immigration writ large, because I was going to say that my strong suspicion is that will be topic numero uno for the Pope when he speaks either before the joint session of Congress or at the United Nations or both. There is obviously a worldwide crisis regarding refugees, and one of the very first things that that Bergoglio did when he became Saint Francis, his first trip, in fact, was to Lampedusa, which is an island in the southern part of Italy, where a huge number of refugees had been arriving by boat, a very perilous journey from Libya and other countries. And he came to bless them, and he came to salute the people who were taking them in. His message on this matter has been unequivocal, that it is the responsibility of the church, it is the responsibility of privileged nations to welcome the less fortunate. I have little doubt that he is going to make mention of that while he is in America. Anita had also just mentioned, sort of, she was talking about kind of the sort of culture of narcissism, and how does this very humble man combat that? Let me state the obvious by saying that on the one hand, the Pope has no power. He has no power over America. He has no power over the rest of the world. There are 1.2 billion Catholics, but he does not have power over their lives per se either, beyond directing them spiritually. What he does have is an immense bully pulpit, and he has used it for effect. He has made a point of saying things like, I want a church for the poor, for saying things like, who am I to judge with respect to gay priests. And so he commands a great deal of influence as a person with approval ratings in America and beyond that any American politician would kill for, that when he says something, it has the force of authenticity and has the force of immense public approval behind it. So you know, whatever he does say is something that politicians from whatever side of the aisle they happen to be on, whatever ideological stripe, are not going to be able to be so dismissive of. When he says something, it gets into the public bloodstream and it tends to stay there.
800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Milwaukee, where George is on the line. George, good afternoon.
Hi. I wonder if we could get the speaker's take on how he got elected 5 years after the Cardinals elected someone who seemed to be quite different from him, Benedict.
The whole subject of how Bergoglio became Pope Francis, how he ascended to the papacy, is a really remarkable one. It's worth noting that when Ratzinger became Pope Benedict, when he ascended to the papacy, that the runner-up happened to be Bergoglio. Bergoglio took his name out of the running after, I think, maybe the second ballot or so, second or third, because he did not want to cause any disruption at a time when there was a sort of trauma. Just a basic feeling of sorrow and it was a fragile state that the church found itself in after Pope John Paul II's death. So Bergoglio was not entirely unknown within the circles of the cardinals who ultimately elected him. He was much better known in among Latin Americans, and he had been fairly influential in various gatherings that they'd had in the years leading up to Pope Benedict's decision to resign. He had not been a big player inside the Vatican, and so that's why the Vaticaniste, the Vatican press, overlooked him when Pope Benedict made his startling announcement, and for the conclave, all of these cardinals arrived, and during the basically 1 to 2 week process or period that led up to the actual vote, Bergoglio gave a speech, and it was not a campaign speech, but it was a speech that he was asked to give, and it was one in which he talked about the need for the church to reach out, the need for the church to quit being so insular, to go out into the periphery, to enact what they say, il incontro, the encounter, and not simply to lecture, but actually to have a dialogue with people. And this really resonated, I was told, by other cardinals with them, and that's when word began, you know, amongst all of them, that the two others, there was a Brazilian and an Italian who were considered the front runners, but quickly those people who were looking for a drastic change after Pope Benedict began to move in the direction of Bergoglio. Now, the open question, of course, is whether when they thought they wanted change, whether what we see today is exactly what they want. I think with some cardinals who voted for Bergoglio, the answer is absolutely. With others, his actions have given them pause.
When he was a cardinal in Argentina, Francis was Bergoglio was once called a traitor to his faith. His brand of progressive thinking not always acceptable to some of the faithful.
Right. I think you may be referring to something that I wrote about in my story, John, in which there was a big ecumenical gathering between evangelicals and Catholics at Luna Park in Buenos Aires, and Bergoglio, as cardinal, attended. That was striking enough, but when the evangelical ministers who were presiding over this invited him to come to the stage, he came in from sitting at the very back amongst everyone else, where he'd been sitting for hours, and people were quite surprised he wasn't dressed as a cardinal. Then he stood on stage and began not talking about the Catholic Church and its primacy, but instead the need for all Christians to unify. And he said, you know, Lord, we are divided, please unite us. And then finally fell to his knees and asked for all of them to pray for him. And the visual of this most powerful Catholic man and a most powerful Catholic in Argentina with in a state of supplication with evangelical ministers standing over him and blessing him dominated the newspapers the next day, and not necessarily in a good way. There was a particular conservative Catholic publication that called him an apostate, for some time now, people in more traditional, more conservative circles have regarded him as such. I was really glad, by the way, that caller had called in a few calls ago, who had talked in very, very emotional terms about the contempt that he believes Pope Francis has shown towards Catholics, towards traditional Catholics like him. And it is definitely worth pointing out that this man, who seems so humble and so sincere and with such an open heart towards the poor, has nonetheless been a very, very polarizing pope, and this is something that we have not seen in quite some time. Of course, he was quite aware that this is what he would be, and he told his friends, as I delineate in my story in National Geographic, that he would have to start making changes right away because he knew that resistance would be coming right away.
Let's take another call. Thanks, George, for your call. By the way, we'll go to Chicago next, and Peter is on the line with us. Peter, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. I guess I just wanted to, for one thing, I just wanted to maybe counteract some of the comments you just referred to, but I guess to the polarizing point, you'd call me a moderate Catholic, I am shocked but so happy that for the first time since, you know, the early days of John Paul II, we have a pope that can get past the letter of the law and look at the spirit of the law and what was behind it. The whole point of Jesus coming to earth was not for the scribes and the Pharisees who wanted to hang on to their old laws, but to those who needed the help and those who were willing to follow the true meaning of their faith. And to me, the Latin masses, now I'm middle-aged, I'm not real young, I'm not real old, but I'll tell you what, the idea of a Latin mass with my back turned to the altar is not something that's going to inspire a lot of spirituality in me. Nevertheless, those options are available for Catholics who want that. I'm specifically happy about the opportunity to look at things like homosexuality, where I've read the Catholic Catechism. I've come from a very large Catholic family, and I, for one, you can read it. And what we are taught in the Catechism is not this polarization message, this sort of, I won't call it hatred, but this isolating and condemning of all these sinners, the homosexuals, etc. In fact, our catechism says quite the opposite, that we should show deference, that we should show tolerance. But these are things that Jesus taught us. And to have someone on the heels of Ratzinger come in and actually give me something that I could be happy about, not because I'm liberal, because I'm not, but because here's someone who can get past the letter of the law and look into the heart and soul of what our Catholicism is. And so he may be polarizing, but I think, you know, every person has to understand the church isn't just for me or for you. It's for everyone. That's what the Catholics mean, universal. And to the extent that we can get a variety of opinions, to the extent that we can have acceptance instead of ostracization, I'm so happy that this pope is aboard, and I'd love to hear you comment on it.
Peter, thanks so much for the call. Comment, Robert Draper?
Well, those are remarkable things from the caller. I really appreciate him, his observations. I completely concur with him that the kinds of things we've been hearing Pope Francis say may seem startling at first blush, but it shouldn't take much reflection for those people who are familiar with the Bible to say, you know, this is all recognizable to me. This sounds like Christianity. And Pope Francis, I think, has this amazing facility for distilling complex theological thoughts into everyday language. But the everyday language is not dissimilar to what we've heard from Jesus Christ. And I think the caller is exactly right that the change in emphasis towards tolerance, rather than constantly condemning gays, for example, is something that seems, again, to be very much in keeping with the teachings of Christianity. For what it's worth, Pope Francis, going back to when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, was against gay marriage. And as far as I know, he still is against gay marriage. In fact, it was over his objections that the legislative body of Argentina passed the first statute in Latin America legalizing same-sex marriage, and it was signed into law by the president. There were friends, in particular a gay friend of Bergoglio's, who I know quite well, who lives in Washington, D.C. He wrote Bergoglio and said, I'm really, really traumatized by the fact that you came out so strong against the statute, and I've also heard that you really think that it's wrong for men and women to, or for people of the same sex to marry. And Bergoglio wrote back a very, very impassioned letter, making absolutely clear that he was against any kind of intolerance. But he also said that I am the head of the Catholic Church here in Argentina. I'm expected to uphold doctrine. So once again, I think that the people who are looking for kind of radical changes in structure and law of the Catholic Church may be disappointed. But from what your caller is mentioning, the change in tonality is sufficient. It's a real and important and even radical thing.
Well, we're going to a break here in just a moment. Gail, I just wanted to get this in because it seems to really be a nice follow-up to what our caller had to say. Gail writes on Facebook, I think Pope Francis is closer to the model of Jesus that the Bible describes. Don't judge others, be humble. It's quite refreshing.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. That again, the sort of cataloging of man's shortcomings is something that Francisco de la Serna, who is a close friend of the Pope's, who is a Franciscan priest in Buenos Aires, had talked to me about this and said that for too long the Catholic Church has been focused on sin. And he said, I think that the main thing that we're going to see this Pope do, that my friend Bergoglio do, is to move move sin out of the center of the Church and move man and man's suffering and man's needs and man's need for love and man's longing for community and love with God, that this will be in the center where it has rightfully belonged.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join our discussion. We'll get some more calls. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Robert Draper, who's the author of a recent cover story for the National Geographic magazine about Pope Francis and the changes that he hopes to make in the Vatican. We're talking about his papacy and what we can expect from his visit to the United States. He's going to be addressing a joint session of Congress. He'll be visiting the United Nations. I believe he's also going to Philadelphia and as part of his American tour. What do you expect when the Pope speaks to Congress? What would you like to hear him say? 800-642-1234. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of WPR. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Kathleen Dunn Show today, talking with Robert Draper this hour about the upcoming visit of Pope Francis to the United States and about his papacy in general and the changes that he would like to make, the different tone that he's taken from previous popes. And wow, look at the phones light up. I knew we would get a lot of calls this hour. Let's go back to the phones and we'll start in Sauk City. Karen is on the line. Karen, hello.
Hi, Carolyn.
Oh, Carolyn, sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to say I'm part of an organization that's sponsoring an event that's promoting Laudato Si. We're co-sponsoring that with Edgewood College on September 27th, starting at 1:30 in the auditorium. And Laudato Si is a beautiful document. It was written to everyone, not just Catholics. I'm a Protestant that grew up Catholic, and I really do appreciate this Pope. I think he rocks.
Karen, thanks so much for your call. Robert Draper?
Yep. So I think we've kind of covered that, so we can
move
on.
All right, let's move on. You know what? Let's take another call. This time let's go to Milwaukee. Jim is with us. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, John. I was just listening to a comment before about the Pope speaking out about global warming and environmental issues, and, you know, conservatives are up in arms about it. But my feeling is that, you know, that is, I think, in his reference and in his mind, and I think in a lot of other people's mind, that it really boils down to greed and corporate greed and income inequality and the fact that, you know, the global warming being caused by corporations that, you know, really don't care a whole lot about what they do to the environment. And I, you know, and that happens, that greed happens to be one of the church's seven deadly sins. And I think that, you know, that he has every right to be speaking about that. And I think he's spot on, you know, saying things like that, because it really involves greed. And I think anybody with any common sense, you know, a common person really understands and realizes that, you know, that is a main problem in our country. It's a serious problem with, you know, I think most people see the greed, and it's a big issue.
Okay, Jim, thanks for your comments. Robert Draper?
Sure, a couple of things. One is that the caller, in fact, is right, or at least right insofar as Pope Francis made a point of saying in the encyclical that the human contribution to climate change is largely a result of large corporations that, without any kind of conscience, have been heating up the planet. And as to the matter of whether this is within the Pope's purview to talk about this sort of thing, of course, that's subject to interpretation. But it should be noted that Pope Francis is not the first Pope to be the so-called Green Pope. Benedict actually deserves that distinction. He himself talked about climate change. He was not as forceful in talking about the causal relationship between human activity and the warming of the planet, but he did allude to it. And so Pope Francis has, again, you know, been a little bit more declarative on this subject, but he's not the first pope to be talking about
it. Well, that leads me to my next question. Are we exaggerating the progressivism of this pope? What other popes in the past have been as progressive as Pope Francis?
Well, I mean, look as recently as John Paul II. I mean, John Paul II also spoke about income inequality. John Paul II was against capital punishment, you know, and I think one can make too much of Pope Francis's ideology of being ultra progressive. I think in a lot of ways he's very much a traditionalist, and behaviorally, by the way, he's a traditionalist. He has never been on the internet in his life. He has never owned a cell phone. He does not have an email address. I'll disappoint all of your listeners who are believing that the Twitter account at Pontifex is actually ruled by Pope Francis. It's not. And he's in a lot of ways very, very old-fashioned. You could argue that being old-fashioned is and progressive in the sense that Jesus Christ was progressive. The tenets of humility, of looking after the poor, of not being obsessed with wealth, of paying attention to the less fortunate. These are Pope Francis, and I suppose you can describe that as progressivism, but I think a lot of people would just consider it being a Christian.
Let's take another call. Madison, we'll go to Madison this time. Claire is with us. Claire, hello.
Hi, John. Thank you. This is fascinating. I am not Catholic, but I think this Pope, with his worldwide influence, has so many important messages for all of us. And it's so interesting that all the things we've been talking about this hour, the Christian right in this country portray as these nasty liberal ideas, And they're really not. And it'll be interesting to see how the Christian right in the U.S. responds when he's here in this country.
Yeah, I think that that might be something we're all looking at. Robert Draper?
Yeah, no, I'll be interested to see also. I mean, we've seen some hints of it. I mean, it conservative commentators such as Rush Limbaugh have just come right out and called him a Marxist, which kind of Pope Francis gave a sort of bemused response, saying that, you know, they used to say that I was a fascist, and now they say I'm a Marxist. Because he was considered an ultra-conservative when he was a provinciale, the head of the Jesuits in Argentina. That was, I think, also, you know, a little off base. It was more a behavioral thing. He was sort of learning how to be a leader. But, yeah, as to how the more conservative Christian community, how they'll respond to him, in particular commentators, I think we've seen some preview of it. And also it's worth noting that his approval ratings in the United States have actually gone down, and they have gone down precisely where you would imagine them to be, in the slot of you know, conservative Americans. He still has very, very high approval ratings, but not what they were, say, within his first couple of months.
Well, has the Pope's popularity helped recruit new Catholics?
You know, the evidence, John, to that is only anecdotal, but bishops, you know, with whom I've spoken, said absolutely yes, and I mean that actually, you know, the Catholic Church in those very sort of coarse terms had been in crisis. I mean, the evangelicals, again, to put it sort of crassly, the evangelical churches were peeling off members, you know, Catholics, and bringing them into the fold all across Africa and all across Latin America. And, you know, in that very real sense, the Catholic Church was becoming a diminished church. And I do think that he has reversed that. But it's just instructive to listen to some of the callers who have said, look, I'm not Catholic, but I'm so fascinated with this man. And so, if nothing else, I think that he has overnight turned a succession of bad news days for the Catholic Church into good news days.
Mm-hmm. Speaking specifically about your cover story in National Geographic, I wonder about some of the challenges that you faced writing this as a journalist. I mean, here is an extremely compelling man, as compelling as any, with serious power and great humility. I'm just wondering if you found yourself gravitating toward him and his story and his personality, unlike maybe some other subjects you've written about.
Well, sure. I mean, a few things. First of all, I split my time, as you mentioned at the top, between National Geographic and the New York Times Magazine. And for the Times Magazine, I tend to write about politicians. For National Geographic, I tend to write about global affairs. Seldom, if ever, have I written about a personality. For National Geographic, we tend not to publish those kinds of stories in our magazine. And in fact, there was a fair amount of internal debate as to whether or not Pope Francis warranted National Geographic treatment. Ultimately, what we decided was that this was about this sort of irresistible force, Pope Francis, meeting the immovable object of the Vatican, of the Catholic Church, and that amounted to a cultural story that was very much in keeping with what we do. My major challenge, I guess there were two of them. First of all, was that Pope Francis is a really complex character. On the one hand, he seems very simple, but he's intelligent, he's thoughtful, and in his own way, he's very sly. The easy thing to would be to say that he was like a great politician, and many people often say that. I think that that's wrong, because fundamental to politicians is the desire to gain and maintain power, and I don't think there's anything about Jorge Bergoglio that has suggested that. But the other challenge that I had when I spent a month in Rome, spending time talking to Vatican officials and thereabouts, is that they don't know him. They're still taking their measure of the man, and it was really that was interesting so far as it went, but to find out what this man was about required my spending time in Argentina. And there, you know, they've all said that the people, the individual they've known for decades, they recognize fully, with one exception. That exception being that he used to be a very solemn, a very sober character. He seldom smiled. They'd call him Mona Lisa. They would call him Carucha, which refers to a sort of bulldog-like jowls. That he was not scowling, but not smiling, and certainly not this figure of encompassing radiance that we now see in Pope Francis. That, to them, marks the one change from the Jorge Bergoglio they've known.
Well, I think that's going to be a great place for us to end it, besides which we're out of time. So a confluence of things. Thank you, Robert Draper, so much for spending this time with us this afternoon.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Robert Draper, who wrote a cover story in a recent issue of National Geographic, previewing, in a way, the Pope's upcoming visit to the United States by talking about how he got to where he is now and giving us some insights into the Pope. Thank you to everyone who called. Thanks to Scott Myers for producing this hour, for K.P. Whaley, who handled on-air production, and for technical assistance, Michelle Good. Thank you all. Hopefully Kathleen will be back in her chair on Monday for All Things Political. Be sure to join her at 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.